So how is everybody? I met some of you already this morning, and I'm happy to meet the rest of you again. And it's nice to be back in America. Nice to be in here. Hare Krishna. This is after a long time that I'm able to spend a few days in Tuvaco Temple, and Vrindavan Chandra was telling me yesterday that after a long time I'm spending time here. And it was mainly because previously I used to, for the time being, I used to have a kind of a base in North Carolina. So generally when I came, my tendency was to just stay, go straight there, to North Carolina. Then four years back, since I got involved in Ujjain, I'm spending most of my time in India. And then last year I had some health problem and I had a heart attack. So I came to America. But that time I stayed in Orlando, Florida, and didn't travel so much. So these are the reasons why I couldn't really spend much time here before. But this time I came and I thought that first I'll come to New York area, and there are a few programs that has been arranged. So I thought that I will just make my base here in Tuvaco and relate to those programs. And I'm happy that I have this opportunity to spend a few days here with you all. Of course, again, I also know that you all are busy, very busy. So, probably you'll be able to come only during the weekend. And still, it's nice to be here. Yesterday, I was discussing with Swami Krishi Prabhu and Vrindavan Chandra Prabhu about the classes that I would be giving for next few days, especially in the evenings. And they suggested that I give a kind of a program that's like a seminar, like on a top specific topic. And then I thought that probably it will be a good idea to speak on the very basics. Actually, that's what I'm doing nowadays. I'm going to the very basic themes of Krishna consciousness, which is otherwise kind of neglected. Like I was noticing that nowadays there is very little interest in Bhagavad Gita. Although we know that Bhagavad Gita is the very foundation of Krishna consciousness, Krishna's own teachings, the words came from Krishna's own mouth. We don't really show that kind of interest in Bhagavad Gita nowadays. like Bhagavad Gita classes in the evenings. In temples, we generally have Srimad Bhagavatam classes in the morning and Bhagavad Gita classes in the evenings. I've noticed most of the temples there is no Bhagavad Gita classes. And even if the Bhagavad Gita classes are there, hardly anyone is there. So, and all, like these are these are the points, these are the issues, these are the areas that we have to be careful about. And that's why the last couple of seminars that I gave were just on Bhagavad Gita. Not only just Bhagavad Gita, to show how Bhagavad Gita is so relevant. Like recently means in January, I had a retreat in South Africa. We went to a mountainous area of South Africa called Drakensberg Mountain, and we rented up a hotel, and about 250 devotees, more than 250 actually, came to the program. And the main theme of the seminar was Bhagavad Gita. The topic actually was the science of Krishna consciousness in the light of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna consciousness, it's important that we understand that Krishna consciousness is a science. Krishna consciousness is not just some faith. Krishna consciousness is not just some concocted doctrine. Krishna consciousness is a science. And to understand the science of Krishna consciousness in the light of Bhagavad Gita. Vedic wisdom is very, very systematic. Vedic wisdom is not only profound, but Vedic wisdom is very systematically structured. Like say for example, we can see the Vedas, the preliminary presentation of the Vedas are divided into three aspects. Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, and then finally Bhakti. The Vedas, Vedic branches of philosophy, there are six branches of philosophy. Karma Mimamsa or Purva Mimamsa, then Naya, Vaisheshika, Sankha, Yoga, and then Uttar Mimamsa, the final conclusion. The Vedanta is actually that Uttar Mimamsa, the final conclusion, which is beginning from preliminary conclusion, Purva Mimamsa. It's beginning with Purva Mimamsa. What's the preliminary conclusion? Everybody wants to enjoy. Now how to enjoy? And then it is transcending that karma aspect, you know, trying to just enjoy. They're getting into the jnana, the philosophical aspect of it. The why we are suffering. We want to enjoy. The whole endeavor is geared towards enjoyment. But what is the ultimate outcome? The ultimate outcome is we are suffering. No matter how hard we are trying to enjoy, we end up suffering. Not only that we are suffering, actually the more we try to enjoy, the more we suffer. That's the reality. So now it's being systematically, philosophically analyzed through Naya, logic, why? Then Vaisheshika. One is leading to, from Naya it's leading to Vaisheshika, which is the atomic theory, what's the structure of this material nature. Then it's leading to Sankhya, the analytical study, and then Yoga, the link with the Supreme. And then finally, when the link is established through samadhi, then comes bhakti, which begins with surrender. So we can see that This is very, very scientific way of understanding the spiritual reality. First of all, the spiritual reality is established beyond this material perception, beyond this sensually perceived material nature. There is another reality, and the knowledge, understanding about that reality is Krishna consciousness, or the Vedic understanding. Vedas are very systematically leading us to that ultimate goal of life. In whichever way we see, like, it's leading gradually from one point to another and taking us to the ultimate goal of life. So it has to be seen and understood in that way. Like, we have to, it is important that we understand why we are doing why we are doing that. Why we are chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Why we are doing what we are doing. It has to be understood clearly. Then only we can present it clearly to the others and make them understand and accept it. As I pointed out time and time again, practically whenever I come, I make one point, I push one point very, very strongly. Where we are in America, where are the Americans? We are in an international society for Krishna consciousness. International society for Krishna consciousness, but where is the international aspect of it? I was just considering one funny situation when Mahatma Gandhi went to attend the round table in London. Winston Churchill very sarcastically commented he addressed Gandhi as a native. And Gandhi just went wearing his dhoti and just a chador. Just a dhoti that also is not properly clad all over his body, just covering up to his knee. And like, sometimes the English are very, very snobbish people, and especially when they want to be insulting, they can be quite insulting. So he addressed Gandhi as a native, saying that. So Gandhi looked around and he said that, I can see in this whole room full of natives, I'm the only foreigner. So, anyway, our approach actually is to invite everybody. That is what Prabhupada's mission. It's nice that the Indians are coming forward. They are welcomed. Actually, the Indians have a very big responsibility to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given that responsibility to the Indians. Bharat Bhumite Hoilo Manushya Janmajar. Those who are born in the holy land of India must take up this responsibility of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. In a way, I feel that that's why Krishna has planted you all in this part of this world, to spread Krishna consciousness. But the purpose, the indication of our success will be in seeing how many foreigners are coming, how many Americans are joining. Srila Prabhupada created this institution. Prabhupada took all the trouble to come from Vrindavan to America for that, to bring, to motivate, to inspire, to encourage the Americans to take up Krishna consciousness. Anyway, please don't forget your mission. Your mission is actually to give this Krishna consciousness to the people all over the world. Mahaprabhu said, Taro Eitesh, that is, deliver the entire world. And this mission, Krishna consciousness movement, has been designed to deliver the whole world. Now, how will they be delivered? By understanding the science of Krishna consciousness and accepting this process of Krishna consciousness, chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra congregationally. And this is how this movement is going to deliver this world. We have to preach. Preaching is the mission. Sometimes today I'm actually being very frank, please don't mind. Because the sadhu's business is to cut, just as the doctor's business is to cure the disease. When a doctor sees a disease, does he come and give you some nice words? Or a rasgulla to eat? He comes and gives you medicine. If the medicine doesn't work, then he cuts you, he operates. Mind you, the sadhu's business is actually to cure. His business is to operate. And it may be painful, it may hurt, but mind you, it's for your benefit. So the point I'm trying to make is, when I see only the Indians are present in a foreign country, in the ISKCON temple, I can see that no preaching is going on. Those who are coming without any need for preaching, they are only coming. Indians are coming means no preaching. If the preaching was effectively going on, then the Americans would have been filling up this room. And remember, Srila Prabhupada took all the trouble to come to this land at a very, very difficult situation when he was alone. At the age of 70, he came. He didn't even know where he was going to stay. He didn't even know what he was going to eat. And he underwent so many difficulties to spread this movement. And Srila Prabhupada was successful. Srila Prabhupada was successful beyond anybody's imagination. Although the starting was very difficult. At the beginning, Prabhupada had to suffer. Prabhupada had to undergo a lot of difficulties, a lot of struggle. But then within 10 years' time, Srila Prabhupada spread this movement all over the world. And that actually showed how Prabhupada was empowered by Krishna. That actually indicated that Prabhupada was sent by Krishna to fulfill this mission of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. And we saw how it happened in a short span of 10 years' time. This movement just spread all over the world. Literally it spread all over the world. When it didn't spread at that time, apparently because some countries were behind iron curtains where devotees couldn't go, even there it spread. There, although apparently it didn't spread, but Prabhupada planted the seed. And as a result of that, in those countries, this movement is expanding with a tremendous dynamism. Jai Shri Shri Gaurnikai Ki Jai. Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. Shri Shri Giridhari Gopal Ki Jai. How many of you have seen ISKCON before, say, 1980? Or even I'll say 1985. Okay, so all of you. And how did you see ISKCON temples those days? Mr. Joshi, what was your experience?
What you said, Maharaji, is true, because more people were joining, and actually after you made that comment, this one thing comes to my mind, which is basically humbling, that every one of us who are here should at least, and we all know we are here, we all know American fans, let's make a mission that every one of us can at least bring one with us next meeting. To force them, do something to bring them and talk about it.
Wonderful.
That's
yeah.
The one way if you want to get involved.
Yes.
This temple would have been built 100 times over if Americans were involved in this temple. It's
right.
Only the Indians, so that's why temple is not being built. That's also, I agree, 100%.
Right.
So I believe that would have been a long time ago. It should have been done. That's my humble opinion.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, thank you very much. So those days, if you came to our temple before 85, and unfortunately this temple was not so, American the temple in New York that time was actually in Manhattan. That's another thing. But can you imagine in Manhattan? In the 6th Avenue, we had an 11-story building. We lost it. And not only we had an 11-story building, that building was filled with devotees. And they were filled with natives. That temple was filled with Americans. Temple room was not large enough for Mangal Arati. If you didn't make it in time, you had to attend the Mangal Arati standing outside the temple room. Like New York temple had, about that building had 250 devotees. Can you imagine? You know, Ms. Huh? Like you have seen that. Like, and that is not just New York. Every single temple, wherever we had our temples, that was the case. Filled with devotees. And you know those days, what was Prabhupada's lamentation? Prabhupada's lamentation was that everyone is coming, only the Indians are not coming. In that way, Prabhupada will be very pleased that so many of you are coming forward. So many so qualified individuals are coming forward to help his mission. Prabhupada will be very pleased, very happy. But at the same time, Prabhupada will ask, where are the Americans? It's not only a question of just Americans or Europeans. When Prabhupada was in Nairobi, a lot of very important Indians were brought to meet Srila Prabhupada in the evening. When they left, Prabhupada called his devotees, his disciples, and he asked, "Did I come to Africa just to meet the Indians? Where are the Africans?" The devotees got the message. So next day they went out and got all the Africans. And Prabhupada was pleased. So in this way we can understand what was actually Prabhupada's intention. And this is how, come to think of it, how did this movement grow? The movement grew because of that. Because of the involvement of the local people, as Mr. Joshi was pointing out, that if Americans were involved, then we could build the temple 100 times over. And that's what Prabhupada did. He built more than 100 temples, 108 temples in 10 years' time. How could he do that? Because of the local involvement. Of course, they were being empowered by Srila Prabhupada. That's why they could do that. So that shows the possibility of growth of this movement. Anyway, I'm sorry that I just kind of drifted away into another direction. The point I was actually trying to make is that let's go back to the basics. The basics are actually Bhagavad Gita. Basics are Srimad Bhagavatam. And you can even go beyond that. The foundation of the spiritual culture, Vedic culture, are actually Mahabharata and Ramayana. This is, how many of you have read Mahabharata and Ramayana or listened to Mahabharata and Ramayana when you are young, back in India? So that was the thing, like when we grew up, when you grew up, we are not exposed to Harry Potters or Superman or Spider-Man. When you grew up, we grew up with Ramayana and Mahabharata. Our grandmothers spoke to us about, while they were singing lullaby, they would just sing Ramayana and Mahabharata, the stories of Ram and Pandavas. So this is the very foundation of our culture. Now the question is, why we don't do that in ISKCON? Because Prabhupada had to present the thing in a very, very short span of time. Therefore, Prabhupada just gave the essence. But we have to understand it is the Vedic culture that we are dealing with. And at least those who are coming from Indian background, we should actually cultivate this process. At least to our children, we can tell them about Ramayana and Mahabharata. They may not be able to understand Bhagavad Gita. They may not be interested in Bhagavad Gita now, but you can rest assured that Ramayana and Mahabharata, they will just get glued into if you just present it to them. I have seen how grown-ups become glued into it. I was telling why I thought of speaking on Ramayana, because recently I was during the Ram Navami, I was in Mayapur. And in the morning class, I was asked to give the class on Ramchandra's pastimes. And I went on for over two hours, and still the devotees didn't want me to stop. They just wanted me to go on and on. And I could see that how devotees are eagerly waiting to be exposed to these narrations. They are not stories. Ramayana is not a story. Ramayana is actually history. Mahabharata is not a fairy tale. Mahabharata is history. It's real. Whatever has happened, it's all the presentation of the facts. But unfortunately, even in India, how they are treated, you know how the Vedic culture, Vedic books on Vedic culture is treated in India? Even by the academic, learned scholars? Mythology. Mythology. Myth. Myth means what? Myth means false. Falsity. Some stories. But is it just a story? If it was a story, then how can it be so defined and systematic? Like, let us consider, maybe some of you have read some books. Okay, let's consider Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, right? We know about Romeo. Shakespeare may have mentioned about Romeo's father. But is there any mention of Romeo's grandfather? Romeo's great-grandfather? Romeo's entire lineage? No. Who is the father of Superman? Does anybody know? So that is the difference. If we probe into it, then we'll see that this is the difference. You go into Ramayana, not only Ramchandra, every single character, his line has been established. Who is Ravan? Ravan is the son of Vishrava. Who is Vishrava? He is the son of Pulastha. Who is Pulastha? The son of Brahma. Then go into any character, Vishvamitra. You'll find his lineage. He is coming in the Moon Dynasty. Coming from Somdev, Purarva, Jajati, Nahush. And this is the line. He is a Kshatriya, he was a Kshatriya king who actually became a Brahmarshi just by austerities and penances. Take any important personality, you'll find a very systematic narration of his lineage. Now, do you get that in a fairy tale? Who is Cinderella's grandfather? So that's the difference. And still you want to call it a mythology? Still you want to call it fairy tales? Go deep into it and you'll see. Go deep into it and you'll see what you get there. Like division of time from atom. Time has been divided. The Western concept, even in spite of all the scientific advancement, what we get the time concept. The lowest concept of time is second. Somebody may well say, well, second has been divided into can be divided. Okay, second can be divided, but what's the term for that? That means you do not know anything beyond second. Second is your lowest denomination. But you go into the Vedic concept of time. What is the lowest concept of time? The lowest concept of time is the pulsation of an atom. And then it goes, it expands into larger and larger dimension. And then you go to the largest larger dimensions. And what do you find? The largest conception of time in today's world is year. Then you may multiply 10 years, 20 years, you can even go 1,000 years, million years and so forth. But it doesn't have any identification. But you go into the Vedic concept of time, yugas. The yugas again have been, they are divided into four. Satta, Treta, Dwapar, Kali. Then there are yugas. Then it goes into the concept of time of the demigods. Not only the human concept of time, the concept of time of the demigods, the concept of time even of higher planetary systems, and ultimately the concept of time in Brahmaloka, Sataloka. What is that concept of time? There, a day of Brahma consists of 1,000 Chaturyugas. And still you call it a fairy tale or mythology or mental concoction. Now the unfortunate thing is that British, while they were trying to dominate over India, they had to make the Indians feel that their culture is useless. They don't have any culture. They're barbarians. It's only the British who came and made them civilized. British brought civilization to India. They had to do that in order to rule over that country. The British have left India 62 years back. But we haven't been able to free ourselves from that mentality that the British have indoctrinated in us. We are still holding on to those concepts. Our whole education system is still following the British system. And that is why we are just following what British taught us. And the whole purpose of the British, whole intention, or whole motive of the British was to undermine the Indian culture. Anyway, that is another thing. So let us become proud of our own culture. And in order to become proud of our own culture, we have to know our culture. If we do not know what it is, then how can we be proud of it? If we do not know what our heritage is, then how can we be, how can we hold ourselves upright and be proud of our heritage? And in order to become proud, we have to see the profundity that it has. Like, there is so much to learn from. Like, so when we just read Mahabharata, read Ramayana, what do we find? Practically in every page, we find something wonderful to enrich ourselves with. We understand who the Supreme Personality of God is, what's the characteristic of the Supreme Personality of God, how He thinks, how He feels, how He looks upon His devotees, and how He deals with the demons. Isn't it important to understand? And as a result, what happens? We automatically want to become subservient to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We want to surrender ourselves to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You read Ramayana, when you hear Ramayana or when you study Ramayana, then what happens? Automatically you begin to see Lord Ramchandra the way he is, and in the light of that you also see who Ravan and his likes are. Then, if the choice is left, who do you want to side with? Do you want to side with Ravan or do you want to side with Ram? So you can see like how simply, in such a sublime way, the mood of devotion is planted in the hearts. We automatically understand the importance of becoming a devotee. I was just considering one point, like how it actually gives us the idea of what happens when you become a devotee, and how easy it is to become a devotee, how to become a devotee. Like Bibhishan, when he defected Ravan, he left Ravan and came to join Ramchandra. Sugriva was patrolling at that time. So Sugriv saw Bibhishan with his four associates, and he became very alarmed. He was just about to kill them. But Bibhishan said, "Look, we are not your enemy. We came here to surrender ourselves to Ram. So please go and tell Ram that we have come to surrender to him. We left Ravan and we know that he is doing something very, very wrong." So Sugriva then went and told that to Ramchandra. Then Ram asked Sugriva, "What do you think we should do with them? How should we deal with them?" Sugriva said, "You should kill them." And he justified his cause that after all he's a Rakshasa. So why a Rakshasa will come to join us? And just isn't it a natural reaction? And how can we trust him? He is saying that he rejected his brother. If he can leave his brother, then how can we trust him? He left his brother, then what is the guarantee of his loyalty to us? And then Ram asked others also, "What do you think? What do you think?" Now this is also another very important. Just see, as I was telling, like from every aspect of Ramchandra's behavior, we can learn so much. Now, generally, what happens? We tend to think, "Well, I'm the leader. I'm the boss. Whatever I tell, everybody has to follow." But here Ramchandra, although he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is asking all his leading followers, "What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? How we should deal with him?" Then everyone actually felt the same way. He shouldn't be trusted. Some said, "Just let him go away," or some said, "Kill him. Don't trust him." Then finally Ramchandra asked Hanuman, "Hanuman, what do you think?" then Hanuman says, from the description, the way he's speaking and things, it seems that he's sincere, he's honest. And then Hanuman gave all the symptoms, why he is not an enemy. Then Ramchandra told, I agree with Hanuman. And then finally, you know what Ramchandra told them? That if one comes to surrender unto me, even with an ill intention, still I accept him. And if one surrenders himself to me once, I take care of him all throughout his life and even beyond his life. Now, isn't it wonderful? See the assurance that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is giving. That if one surrenders himself to him once, even if he comes with an ill intention, still he accepts him. And if one surrenders himself even once, then he takes care of him throughout his life and even beyond his life. That is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, we may not understand it, but through these incidents, this understanding becomes real. Yes, in Bhagavad Gita, we are understanding. Krishna is making the same point. Konteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. But that understanding becomes solid, that understanding becomes founded when we come across these incidents. And these incidents are not unreal. These incidents are absolute truth. So that is why it is important to understand, in the importance to be exposed to these scriptures. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes and he becomes like one of us. He displays his emotions like one, as if he is one of us. He is surrounded by his devotees, but due to the Jogamaya's influence, those devotees cannot actually recognize his identity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they treat him as if an ordinary human being, out of love. Like Dasarath, when Vishwamitra came to take Ram to kill these terrible Rakshashas, Maricha and Subahu, who are spoiling his sacrifice. Vishwamitra just asked for... Vishwamitra came and made the presentation. Look, this is what is happening. Dasharatha immediately said, okay, fine, I will take care of it. I'll take care of those demons. Vishwamitra said, no, I want Ram to come with me. Ram to deal with them. Then Dasharatha, he was so attached to Ram that just when he heard that, he almost fainted. And he appealed to him that, please, Ram, he's not even 16. He's just a lad. He's just a young boy. How is he going to deal with this Subahu and Marichi? They're the accomplices of Ravan. And Ravan, by the blessings of Brahma, became immortal. Nobody can deal with him. Even Jamraj cannot deal with him. Jamraj, the death of God, I'm sorry, God of death, the controller of death, cannot deal with him. He was defeated. Jamraj is defeated by Ravan. Not quite defeated, but Brahma came to Jamraj and told that, look, you won't be able to deal with him now. So let him be. In course of time, he will die. But he is not to die right now. So let him be. So Jamraj actually retreated from the battle, and Ravan thought that Jamraj was defeated. Actually, in a way, Jamraj was defeated. He became so powerful. Ravan became so powerful. And so Ravan's two accomplices, two main henchmen, were Marichi and Subahu. And he thought, how can he kill? And these demons, these Rakshasas, are very treacherous in their ways, and even the fight. They are not going to fight in a fair battle. And Ram has not only inexperienced young boy, but he hasn't been properly trained up in the art of fighting. So how is Ram going to deal with them? Dasarath told Vishwamitra, please let me go with my army. I will deal with them. I will kill them. Please don't worry about it. But Vishwamitra insisted, look, if I wanted you, I would have told you. I want this boy. Because Vishwamitra knew who Ramchandra was. But Dasarath didn't know. Although he is the father, so that is the wonderful aspect of the Lord's pastimes, that in order to experience this mellow of parental love, Vatsalya Ras, he is actually creating the situation when Dasarath is thinking of him as his own son. He is not thinking of him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because if he knew that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he couldn't display his filial affection towards him. So, this is the wonderful arrangement of Yogamaya that enables the Supreme Personality of Godhead to have this exchange. And then, of course, finally, Vishwamitra just said that, look, I came to you, you promised that you are going to fulfill my desire and fulfill my expectation. Now, if you don't, then I will leave this place. And that will be a disgrace to your entire family. You will lose all your piety. You will lose everything. So this is another. See, through the incidents, we learn. We are learning how we should be truthful to our commitments. When we say that we are going to do something, we should not retract. We should continue. Because if we do, then we lose our piety. So, then Ram is taken by Vishwamitra. Dasarath had to give. No, Dasarath still refused. He didn't want to give. He said, look, if Ram goes and if anything happens to Ram, then not only I will die, everyone will die due to that mishap. Because he was thinking, how this 16-year-old boy, not even 16 as yet, 15 years, some month old, how is this young boy is going to deal with all these terrible Rakshasas? And then finally Vasishtha told Dasarath that, look, you have given your words, so you must stick to your words. When Vishwamitra came, you told him that you are going to fulfill his desire. So you must stick to your thing. And then he took him aside and told him that, look, don't worry. Vishwamitra is an extremely powerful individual. He could create one entire heavenly planet with his mystic power. So just consider how powerful Vishwamitra is. Vishwamitra himself could take care of these demons. But because he has accepted this life of a Brahmana, that's why he is not doing that. He is powerful enough. So when he is protecting your son, there's nothing to worry about. Vasishtha also knew that Ramchandra is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he told him, finally he told him, that, and who do you think your son is? He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Dasarath couldn't believe that at first. He said, How can I accept that He is the Supreme Personality of God? And the mood was, even if He is the Supreme Personality of God, He is my son. And also Vasishtha made another very nice point, that actually consider this to be an auspicious incident, because Vishwamitra holds all these celestial weapons. He has the celestial weapons in his custody. So when he takes Ram, he'll actually give him all these celestial weapons. And he'll also give him the divine mantras. And he'll empower him. So in this way, Vasishtha actually convinced Dasarath. And then Ramchandra goes and just takes care of these two demons. And on the way he kills Taraka, another terrible witches, terrible demoness. And Vishwamitra was guiding him, do this, do that. And he, true to his Vasishtha's words, he did that. That evening, when they travelled and came to the bank of the river, and he told Ram to go take bath, and he gave Ram and Lakshman the celestial weapons and the divine mantras. The Supreme Personality of Godhead doesn't need that, but still this is his pastimes. He is acting like a human being. So whatever a human being, whatever procedures a human being is meant to go through, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is going through that. Just as Krishna, he went to the ashram of Sandipani Muni to study. He doesn't need to study, but he's setting an example. Jajjad acharate srishti. What a human being should do. Must study under the guidance of a qualified spiritual master. And and Ram, since we started this anecdote, let's just finish this. Ramchandra was taken by Vishwamitra to Siddhashram. It's a beautiful place on the foothills of a mountain. And just by seeing the place from a distance, Ramchandra was enchanted by that. Such a beautiful place. And he could hear this beautiful sound of the singing, of the chirping of the birds. He could see the movement of the beautiful animals there, and the forest was filled with fruits and flowers, and it looked so, and the breeze was blowing in such a gentle way, and he could see the hermitage of so many saintly people there, rishis. And then Vishwamitra told what this place was. He narrated the story of Bali Maharaj and how Vamandev came to deceive him. And this was the place of Vamandev, Siddhashram, where Vishwamitra decided to perform his sacrifice. And what is the purpose of the sacrifice? For the benefit of mankind. So this is what the Brahmanas are doing. The saintly people are doing. Saintly people are engaged in. Just to benefit the mankind. That's what they desire. He wanted to perform a specific yajna just to benefit the human mankind. And he narrates the story of Bali Maharaj, and he describes what a wonderful character Bali Maharaj was. The Lord appeared as Vamandev, as the son of Kashyap and Aditi, just to regain the kingdom for the demigods from Bali, to take it away from, to deceive Bali and take the kingdom away, heavenly planets away, and offer it back to the demigods, devas. And when Vamandev appeared, a little boy, Bali just completed his sacrifice, and he was just now offering in charity. Whoever, that is the final conclusion of the sacrifice. And the kings who used to perform this sacrifice used to be so generous that anybody could come with any wish, he would fulfill them. So when this little boy came, Bali Maharaj said, "You look so wonderful. My whole heart has been captivated by your beauty. Who are you? You are not from this planet. You are not an ordinary personality. Tell me who you are. And ask anything from me. I am prepared to give you anything." And Bhavan replies that, "Yes, you are speaking like a befitting son of Virochan in the line of Prahlad. This is indeed befitting your nature, your exalted lineage." And so I have come to ask something from you. So please give me your words that what I ask you will give it. Bali said, "Anything. My treasury, my granary, my kingdom, my army, my anything that you want, I'm going to give it to you." So the little boy said that, "All I want is 3 steps of land. According to my steps." Bali just smiled. He said, "You came to Bali, who is known all over the world for his charity, and you are asking just for 3 steps of land?" And then Bhavandev gives a wonderful lecture that how greed can never be satisfied with how much you get. Therefore, better not to ask for anything that is beyond one's need. He said, "All I need is 3 steps. All one needs is 3 steps of land, because that's large enough to lie down." Then only he needs that much. Otherwise, when he's walking, he doesn't even that much even. All he needs is just 1 step at that time. So Shukracharya became alarmed. He said, "Don't grant it to him." He said, "This is Narayan, who is the well-wisher of the demigods. He has come to cheat you." And Bali said, "If Narayan comes to me asking for something from me, I will consider that that is the ultimate perfection of my existence. As a matter of fact, while I am even thinking about it, that what he wanted, I will grant it to him, I am feeling an immense joy within my heart. So what to speak of when I literally offer it to him, you know, what kind of ecstasy I will experience." So Shukracharya tried to stop him in so many ways, and you know the consequences of that. They eventually, Shukracharya has tried to even stop. You see, what actually happens is, he takes water in the hand, doing achaman, and then utters the commitment, words of commitment, passing the water down into the hand of the recipient. That means the contract, the agreement has been signed finally. And Shukracharya, when he couldn't stop Bali Maharaj, then he tried to stop the water from flowing from the water pot as his last effort to prevent Bali from accepting this agreement. So in order to do that, Shukracharya entered into the water pot and blocked the passage of the water pot. So Bali tried to get the water, but it didn't come out. So then Bhavandev said, "See, let's see what happened." So he took a kusa grass and just poked it. And as a result of that, Shukracharya's one eye became blinded. And so this is how Boli Maharaj offered the three steps of land to Vamandev. And then in this way Vamandev regained Sukracharya's, Boli Maharaj's domain. With one step he covered the entire earth planet. With the second step he covered the entire heavenly planets, all the way up to the covering of the universe. And there was no place for the third step. So Boli Maharaj offered his head as the place for his third step. Such noble characters. Like just by hearing, one becomes inspired to develop such qualities. And that's why it's so important that we expose our children to these scriptures. Although apparently to them it will seem like just stories. But these stories will enrich them and build their characters in such a wonderful way. We often talk about role model, heroes. Who are the heroes in today's world? The worst criminals are becoming the heroes nowadays. And do you want your children to follow those characters and become like them? So give the choice to them, whether they want to become Ravan or whether they want to become Ram. If you give them the choice, you can rest assured they will opt for Lord Ramchandra. You can give them the choice between Kauravas and Pandavas. You can give them the choice between Duryodhan and Arjun. And you can rest assured that they will go for Arjun. Didn't that happen to you when you heard about Mahabharata and Ramayana? Did you ever think of, even in our remotest dream, did you ever sympathize with Duryodhan? Rather we thought that if I had a bow and arrow, then I would have finished him off. So, then Vishwamitra pointed out that this was the place where Vamandev used to reside, known as Siddhashram, and he is performing the sacrifice there. So he prepared himself for the sacrifice, which would last for 6 days. And for these six days he took the vow of not speaking, and just to perform the sacrifice. The 5 days went by, and Ram and Lakshman were guarding the area. If anyone came, they would deal with them. And what a beautiful description has been given, that just the way eyelids guard our eyes from any external danger, Ram and Lakshman were guarding the sacrificial arena. See, 5 days went by, no one came, there was no trouble. On the sixth day, Ram said, Lakshman, let us become extremely vigilant, because these demons are going to come today. And true to his words, they came. And they started to shower blood and flesh and bones and trying to desecrate the place. And Ramchandra then took one weapon called Manavastra and shoot it at Marichi. Marichi was unaware that there could be any resistance. Poor guy, he was completely unaware, and he was gleefully trying to spoil the joy, the sacrifice. And all of a sudden comes this terrible weapon and hits him right on the chest and makes him fly for 100 yojanas, that means 800 miles, and lands him in the ocean. This is how Marichi survived. And Ram told Lakshman, this Manavastra is very compassionate. It hits, but it doesn't kill. But for Subahu, he took the Agnehastra. That weapon is merciless. And Subahu was hit by that and he died. Right there. And then with the Vayavastra, he took care of all the other Rakshasas. And the sacrifice was successfully performed. Vishwamitra was so pleased and he embraced her with all the affection of his heart. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. For next 2 days, two nights also, I will speak on Ramayana. And I won't take so long to do the prelude tomorrow. But tomorrow also there is one function. Tomorrow is Sarvesh's son's daughter's birthday celebration. Which birthday? How many birthdays?
Second
birthday. So, 7 o'clock, the ceremony will start?
Yes, it will be finished when your aarti class. So, your okay. Class will start at 7:30.
Okay. So, anyway, we'll have a little celebration. How big is going to be the cake? Make sure it's big enough so that everybody gets a big piece. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any questions? Okay. Oh, yes.
Where is the siddhashram now today? And is it still an ashram?
Good question. I have to check it.
It's called Buxar nowadays.
Oh, is it in Buxar? That's in Bihar.
Yeah, Bihar.
Okay. Siddhashram is in Bihar. Okay. Yeah, it's somewhere on the foothills of the Himalayan mountains. Yeah. But Buxar is not exactly at the foothills. Are you from Bihar?
No, actually I was listening to Radha Govinda Swami's tapes on Ramayana.
Okay.
He was mentioning it, so that's what I'm repeating.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. So, Buxar is on the bank of the Ganges. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande, Hare Krishna.